And we'll say, I'm gonna sing out. I'm gonna march on. And everybody said,
I'm gonna sing out.
Gonna march on.
I'm gonna march on.
Gonna put one foot in front of the other foot.
I'm gonna sing out.
Gonna march on. Got to keep on going.
I'm gonna sing out.
Gonna march on.
I'm gonna march on.
When my grandmama marched.
Hi there. I'm Jeff Browning, and welcome to Benders of the Arc podcast, where we interview movers and shakers for social change.
My guest today is Wanda Battle, a Montgomery, Alabama native, great Jalamuso, female griot, talented singer, master storyteller. She is the former tour director of Dexter Avenue King Memorial Baptist Church in Montgomery, where the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. pastored for almost 6 years while he led the Montgomery bus boycott. She is now the founder and CEO of Legendary Tours, LLC. She has a passion for human and civil rights and social justice. She is no stranger to the historical relevance of Montgomery. Being born during the 1956 Montgomery bus boycott and raised during the 60s civil rights movement, Wanda has grown up with a strong sense of community, and she loves to share that with people through the art of storytelling. On a personal note, I had the opportunity to meet Wanda during a civil rights pilgrimage tour that I took with about 20 others from Westminster Presbyterian Church in Olympia, Washington. Wanda, as you will hear for yourself, is an ebullient, enthusiastic, and inspiring storyteller and historian of Montgomery in the civil rights era. Welcome, Wanda.
Hello and welcome, Joff. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So how would you describe, to begin with, how would you describe your spiritual and religious upbringing and your own evolution?
Oh, that's a very good question. I would have to start with my parents and my grandparents, because they were amazing leaders in the community. They were very spiritual in the sense of they had a very grounded sense of faith. And because they were leaders in the community in business, it gave them a platform to really extend kindnesses. And then for me as a kid, watching them serve the community, it grounded a faith in me to watch God work in this community that was living in a segregated city, to just watch God protect us and how they trained us and loved us as a community. But I really thank my parents and grandparents for being advocates and activists at that time as well.
Yeah, very powerful experiences in your family, it sounds like.
Yes.
Well, you've described yourself as a Jalamuso or griot. For those of us that may not be familiar with the rich history of those traditions, what are they and how do you incorporate them into your work?
Yeah, so everybody, most people have heard of the griot, who in West Africa is the male storyteller, historian. You know, they pass the history down and tell the stories from generation to generation. Well, the female counterpart to the griot is the Jalamuso, Jalamusa. And so I decided to take on that title of Jalamuso as a female storyteller, historian, entertainer. Yeah, and it seems to fit me so well, everybody, because I love to sing and I love acting and I love drama, which you'll see as we continue. So it served my what I do in tourism very well.
Yeah, well, that really comes through powerfully when you speak to groups, and I know we experienced that ourselves. It was just so extraordinary to hear you weave in your own personal experience with the history of Montgomery. And I just found that so powerful and helpful. It was such a blessing to be with you. One of the things, you know, we're approaching the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington that took place on August 28th, 1963. First of all, did you and your parents attend that march? And what, if anything, do you remember about it?
My father passed away in 1962, but he was a part of that coming through the bus boycott era up to 1963, you know, till he passed away in 1962. But my mother never stopped. She was very engaged in the community. She led what was called the Taborian. Well, my father was one of the leaders with the Taborian Knights and Daughters of Tabor is what they were called. There was like a Masonic group. And my mother led the youth portion of that organization. And she created majorettes who would march in the parades and singers. She organized a group of singers who went to the March of Washington, that she took them there to sing during that historic moment. And even now, even though I was a kid then and I wasn't quite as familiar with how all of that was working, I have now come to appreciate it so much to know that my mother had that kind of heart at such a young age understand that this was an important moment in history. And so she knew Dr. King and Mrs. King, Reverend Ralph Abernathy, Mrs. Juanita Abernathy, and they were friends. Mm-hmm. And so all of them were young people at that time. As you know, when Dr. King came to Dexter, he was just 25 years of age. So These are not old people. These were young people. For myself, I'm looking at these people who are in their 30s, you know, early 30s. And I'm watching them with such courage. And then having such creativity in the vision of it all, I was just amazed. And it has grounded me, and it inspires me every day in this work that I'm doing. Yeah. And so I'm very, very thankful that the March on Washington, that the 60th anniversary that we are commemorating now, it brings back such wonderful memories, and it continues to inspire me. And I do want to say, remember, John Lewis was the youngest keynote speaker that day at 23 years of age. I'm like, these people were amazing young people. And that's why when I'm talking to young people, I'm like, you all on the pulse right now. Come on, take the mantle. Don't be afraid. Step into your place. And they are doing it too. Yeah. They're speaking out and marching, you know, and advocating.
Yeah. So inspiring to go back and read some of that history. And, you know, I just, John Lewis is just one of the heroes of our country. And I just can't say enough about him. You know, but in light of that 60-year anniversary, I guess, it seems like we've made progress in fits and starts. So I'm just wondering, how would you assess the state of racial justice and equity in the region and throughout our country at this time?
Okay, let me say it this way, and this is how I share it every day on my tours or just in general, because the movement is a lifestyle. See, love is a lifestyle. Human rights, social justice, civil rights, it's all the lifestyle of relationships of people. And so for me, I think it starts with me. It starts with you and each one of us individually. I believe that as we continue to educate ourselves, to change our minds and hearts about the cultures of people, what makes every culture, you know, vibrant, what is so wonderful that brings this culture to the table and each culture to the table. Because see, it's not about the color, it's about the culture. And what we're referring to in racism is really founded in the color. Mm-hmm. So once we get past the color and peel down this outer layer and realize we all look creepy and that it is, we're all just human beings here on this planet and we need one another. I believe that that's the foundation of changing us. Now, the then and the now in human rights, social justice, and civil rights, I believe we're still fighting the same fight. Mrs. Coretta Scott King said it this way. She said, struggle is a never-ending process. Freedom is never really won. You earn it and win it in every generation. Hmm. So what she's saying is that we just continue to pass the mantle.
Yeah.
We'll always be fighting the fight of good and evil and love and hate and race against humanity. And so take your place, Jah. Take your place, Wanda. Take your place, everybody. And step to the table and bring love. Mm-hmm. Bring compassion and understanding. So keep your heart open to embrace the diversity of all of us. Because really, that's the beauty of us.
Yeah. Well, and that certainly comes through in your conversations with groups. You are just so inspiring. And I know, too, that, you know, John Lewis, I think what I have come to appreciate about him so much is that it was a lifestyle. It was, a spiritual discipline. When he and Diane Nash and so many others, got that training with Dr. Lawson, James Lawson, before their efforts in Nashville. I mean, that sort of set the tone for the commitment to the effort for social justice in our communities. And I take great inspiration from that. And I guess the way that you're describing it is the way that I've understood it too. And that is that it's a difference between a tactic, nonviolence as a tactic, and nonviolence as a lifestyle, as a spiritual discipline that we incorporate into our lives every day. So I thank you for that understanding and an insight that you're providing for us.
I love the way you said that it's a spiritual discipline. I love that, Jah, because it is.
Yeah.
And every day we're choosing it, see? Mm-hmm. It's not something that just happens. Every day we're choosing that spiritual discipline to love, to forgive, to be compassionate and understand and open our hearts up to each other, to appreciate one another in our diversity. So I love that, the way you say that, spiritual discipline.
Yeah. Well, I guess, along that line, there seems to be a lot of pushback from we seem to make progress in fits and starts. How do we really break through? How can we really push the goal of racial justice and equity in our communities, whether we live in the South or someplace in the North where we like to think of ourselves as being more progressive in the North, but we know that we have our own problems in other areas of the country. So is there any particular advice that you would have for communities in groups that come through there. What can we do to actually make a difference in our communities locally?
One of the things that immediately came to mind was the complete work of John Lewis on voting rights. Many people, and especially our young people, I feel sometimes they're becoming apathetic in the voting process and with it. But as John Lewis said, he said the vote is the most powerful tool to bring about change. You know, and he was speaking in government. And so I agree, because the voices that are representing us are representing where the dollars are going to go, what initiatives are going to be addressed and prioritized, who is going to be represented in terms of diversity at the table. And I just want to say that in this country, we are really fighting a fight to get more diverse people in our legislatures and in our local political public service arena. And I pray that people will begin to really understand the power and the purpose of our local elections. Here in Montgomery, in 2020, November of 2020, we elected our first African-American mayor, Mayor Stephen Reed, here in Montgomery. There'd never been an African-American mayor here.
Wow.
And,
wow.
And so I think we're in the work. How do we get the Native American culture at the table in government? You know, because that's another voice of human rights that needs to be addressed. Because here in Alabama, as most of you know, Alabama was inhabited by the Native tribes. Mm-hmm. But the Europeans pushed them off in the Trail of Tears. And, you know, they're still now trying to get that place.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, and I just want to say this, the Alabama Museum of Archives and History is now bringing the Native tribes back to the table to talk about how would you like to have your history presented here in this museum that used to predominantly exhibit Confederate history, Civil War history, and then the artifacts that they took from those Native tribes when they pushed them off of their lands here in Alabama. And so I'm very grateful now that the Museum of Archives and History is now having that conversation with the tribes to make things right. But it came with a mandate too from the federal government that they had to do it. So I'm just grateful, but we're in the continual work, Joff. Yeah, there's no definitive answer, but in every sector of human life, and I think the vote is one of the most important, is getting the right people in these positions of policymaking that will represent we, the people.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, I'll ask Wanda about the status of voting rights in Alabama. Stay with us.
And we'll say, I'm gonna sing out, I'm gonna march on. And everybody said,
I'm gonna sing out,
gonna march on.
If you are new to our podcast, please visit our blog at bendersoftheark.com, where you can find more information about our stories and the people behind them. Now let's return to our guest.
Well, we've seen a lot of work by states to suppress voting voting purges, purging the rolls, reducing polling locations, and on and on and on. What are you seeing there in Alabama, and how is it impacting your communities?
Yes, here in Alabama, our legislature, and I have to just put it this way, the white legislators here in the state of Alabama are really off of the pulse. And I am sorry to say that outside of Montgomery County, this is a red state. It's a Republican state. And so you're getting those representatives out of those counties who believe a certain way, which does not include we the people, because banning of books, women's reproductive rights, health care issues, all of these platforms that are coming to the table, they are just not addressing them with the heart of serving we the people. And that should be first and foremost, is how do we keep affecting change in our communities that make Alabama a better state? Yeah, a state of love and diversity of all people.
Yeah, that sounds so important. And, there's been a pushback about American history and how we describe American history.
Oh, yes.
I know Governor Huckabee next door in Arkansas is trying to suppress Black American history AP course. Are you seeing similar efforts there in Alabama?
Absolutely. That's another key issue. How do you separate history? You can't. I believe that's a failing goal. That is an illusion on their parts, because all history is our history. We're all connected, and every day the lifestyle of just humanity is telling a story that's all unified. Mm-hmm. All of our public programs that were created in this country to help, the people of the country. How do you separate that? You can't. Mm-hmm. How do you separate when the tornadoes and the hurricanes and fires come and wipe out everybody? How do you separate everybody who's been devastated, who now need FEMA, whether you were rich or poor or in between, whatever? But I think that's a losing battle. And I think that is just an illusion on their part to think that you can separate history of anyone. And so every day, that's another issue I am teaching and speaking and examining even the more myself. Yeah. Because I believe that no matter what cultural history it is, it's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because the annihilation of the Jews affected everybody. It didn't just affect the Jews. Because right. All of us are connected. We go back in our family lines. We are all connected.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like it's such a fool's errand to think that
it
you
is. Can yes. This,
try to make it all positive, as though we can't love one another with our warts and all. I mean, just because I find the truth out about, what we did wrong in Vietnam doesn't mean that I stopped loving my country or efforts that we did to wipe out Native Americans or on and on. But it's so important to understand that history in order to have a realistic understanding of how we move forward in the country.
Oh, yes. Jeff, you remember as visiting the Legacy Museum and the narrative of transatlantic slave trade and mass incarceration in this country. Now, that's a tough piece of history to embrace, but we must, because even me as an African-American, every time I go in there, I cry.
Yeah,
because there's something that touches a place in me for humanity that makes me weep at the cruelty Yeah. Of which another human being could mistreat another human being. And when my sister and I visited Dachau, Germany, was it last year? Yes, when we traveled last year, gone to that concentration camp, and I wept and cried as much as I did when I stood there taking in all of the heinous cruelty of the transatlantic slave passage.
Yeah. Well, and it also occurs to me that if we try to whitewash our history, to only talk about the positive things, I think what it does is it makes us more susceptible to repeating history.
Oh, yeah.
We aren't willing to confront the reality of the cruelty of slavery, of mass incarceration, of all of these things, the Holocaust, that it makes us more susceptible to actually repeating that. So, I mean, that seems to me to be one of the important parts of our history that we really need to be able to talk about and discuss. And so I hope we're able to get through this troubling period where we keep trying to rewrite history and revise it.
Well, Jeff, you know something? Can I say this? Sure. I have hope. I never lose hope that we're going to move to a better place. And the reason why I don't lose hope is because when I have come to appreciate the fact that Attorney Brian Stevenson and Equal Justice Initiative, the heart and the understanding to share the story. And just as you said, he believes that way too. He says that we must accept what has happened so that we don't repeat it. And so I believe for the thousands of people who are coming here to Montgomery from around the world to understand this history that was cruel, but yet many people come from different cultures who want to be changed by it. And I think many are.
Yeah.
Or they
yeah.
wouldn't come.
Yeah.
So I have hope, even in the midst of all that looks so and is. It doesn't even just look at it, it is horrible. But yeah. I have hope.
Yeah, that museum is just so extraordinary. I can't say enough about that experience. It was breathtaking. And it's the kind of thing that you need to go back there again and again and again, because it's so important to revisit that. And like a good museum, it's curated in a way that you can't take it all in just one experience of one visit. We have to go back again and again. So, thank
true.
You for reminding us of that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, I guess this, we see so many, I guess, ways in which we're still struggling with this, and certainly that brawl or melee that occurred there, right there on the Montgomery docks. And I remember visiting those docks when we were there in Montgomery. Why is it so entrenched? Why do we still have so much trouble making progress?
And you're speaking of the brawl that took place couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Just say this to you, Joff, and everybody that's listening to this. Okay, so African Americans took it a certain way. Let me just put it that way. And other cultures of people took it a certain way. For us in the African American community, when we saw Mr. Pickett throw that hat up off his head after he had admonished those men for a few minutes and seemed like he was getting nowhere, just the symbolism of him, the way he tossed that hat off his head was like, okay, it's on. You've taken me too far. And of course, as we know, the brawl entailed. And then all of these people, other Caucasians, come and get in the brawl. And then here comes some other Black people. And I was so thankful that we are living in a time where videotaping on cell phones is just classic. Because I got to see all of these different aspects of that brawl that was taking place. The chair, I hadn't seen it on one video. But people were in different positions. And the young man that jumped in the river.
Yeah, Aquaman, they called him. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It was really, for many African Americans, it was a moment of just sheer joy, laughter, like, okay. Okay, this is another situation. We're familiar with this.
Yeah.
But thank God that this isn't going down the way that it normally does.
Yeah. Well, and I guess I'm just wondering, you know, what's the impact that you think has the efforts of Black Lives Matter and other anti-racism efforts have had in our recent past here? It seems like there's a lot of attention to this, and yet there's also a bit of a backlash, you know, against it. It seems like we're making progress when we're talking about Black Lives Matter and a lot of these efforts here, and then we get a pushback on so much of this. Are we really making progress?
Yes. The answer is definitively yes, because groups are organizing now. They're not just responding just in a quick response. No, groups are organizing, and they're organizing as nonprofits. They're organizing as communities. One of the groups that I toured on yesterday was a group out of Texas, out of Houston, Texas. And they were a combination of Latina, our community, and African Americans who have been working in their different various communities. And I think the West, North, South, East, and West of Texas have different groups. And they came on this trip to Montgomery to experience this civil rights as they are continuing their efforts to make a difference in the communities there. And I was so very impressed at how well they had organized this trip and the focus in which they were doing it in that spirit of love. Because they stood in a circle to hold hands like I would do on many of my tours at Dexter Church. And it was, the room had such a spirit of hope and love and togetherness. Mm-hmm. And their motto was strength together.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So together, yeah, there's power. And I would often say about the Montgomery bus boycott, when the unity of this community brought about change. Because when the people decided we're not afraid, they took a stand with Rosa Parks and Dr. King let them, and they stood against it. And it changed the law, see, because that's another aspect. Voting, see, it changes laws. Mm-hmm. It changes policies. Mm-hmm. And yet you need those certain policies changed rather than just in addition to how we treat each other every day. Because some people, as Dr. King said, he says that some people won't lynch you because there's a law in place that says you can't now.
Mm-hmm.
Where in their heart, they really would want to. So he says he appreciates the law that now that gives a mandate.
Yeah. Right. Well, and yet we know that laws, you know, we can pass laws that outlaw segregation and discrimination, and yet we have so much difficulty actually embodying that in our in our culture. It's frustrating how persistent the discrimination is. And so, you know, I know that you're hopeful about this, but I know that some people are not very hopeful. Because they see the glass half empty, and you always seem to see it half full, at least maybe three quarters full or something. But how do we get to that place where we're able to really embrace one another and see the larger community, that we're all just children of God who are in need of one another?
Yeah. Jeff, you know something? It has become simple to me. It's my choice. It's as simple as that. It's my choice. When I shared with you all that I'd been suicidal twice and I'd been homeless, and for many years I beat myself up because of the decisions I made that got me there. And I couldn't seem to get past that. And I share that on my tours because I hope to help us understand that the choices that we make every day, it reflects what our lives are really going to be like. We can wake up in the morning and say, man, this is a horrible day. And we can choose that. And you can be sure your day is going to be horrible because you've already set the path for it. You're gonna see it a certain way. And it's just like that to me in how we see one another every day. I challenge myself to change the, and I'm going to say it this way because it's a popular term. I am working changing the racist thoughts that I have myself. You know, so that at times when I see white people do certain things, I'm like, man. Yeah. Now that was white.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead, John.
Sorry, I remember reading Ibram X. Kendi's book on how to be an anti-racist.
Yes.
Where he talks about his own racism.
Yes.
And I think that was so liberating in a way that helps us to look, if Ibram X. Kendi can talk about his own racism and own up to that, it gives the rest of us license to talk about how we have been impacted by our own racism and the racist culture. It's like the water that we swim in or something. I like your description of it being a choice and getting up every day and saying, this is who I'm going to choose to be.
Well, let's take another break. And when we come back, Wanda will share with us how she maintains balance in her life. Stay with us.
And we'll say, I'm gonna sing out. I'm gonna march on. And everybody said,
I'm gonna sing out.
Gonna march on.
I'm gonna march on.
If you are new to our podcast, please visit our blog at bendersoftheark.com. where you can find more information about our stories and the people behind them. Now let's return to our guest.
And we have to choose it every day because there's so many things happening in our world now. So many things on the political scene. Now there are days when I don't watch the news. I mean, I'll intentionally not watch the news because I don't want to feed my spirit with a lot of what is going on, you know, and I just need to center myself. You know, it's a part of my quote unquote zen of coming back to that place to keep myself grounded. Because if you don't choose to find that center place of peace and and not just peace, but peace and understanding that is based on love and righteousness, meaning always advocating for what is right, you will become overwhelmed. There are people who have committed, who are continuing to commit suicide. Yeah, there's so much abuse. Domestic violence is at an all-time high. Yeah. Our communities are reeling with crime.
We're
impatient with each other. That's why we call many white women Karens, who just because they are engaging, you know, with Black men in a certain way, and they have no patience or understanding, they respond to call the police on them, or, you know, and that is just, that's we've got to change it. We got to choose every day to be a better human being, not based on our shade, and realize we're all one race of people. One race, human race. That's us.
Thank you for that insight. You know, one of the things that you described in your work is the way in which the impact of the efforts in Montgomery and other places throughout the South, and the impact that that has, just a ripple effect. And I mentioned to you that I found a comic book, and I'm going to show it to you here. I'm going to send this to you. And this is a comic book that I think the Fellowship of Reconciliation helped produce along with the NAACP. They sent it all over the world, and it was about the Montgomery bus boycott and the power of that. That ended up, now I need to give credit to a friend of mine, Cole Manley, who's a PhD student, wrote a book called The Unlikely World of the Montgomery Bus Boycott, Solidarity Across Alabama, the United Kingdom, and South Africa. And what they found was, what he found was that this comic book got distributed all around the world, and in South Africa, they were reading this and creating boycotts themselves based upon this work that began here. So I guess I'm just wondering if you want to reflect at all about the ripple effect of so much of what happened in Montgomery and throughout the South on the rest of the world.
Oh, yeah. Because people took notice, and I thank God for the media, as Dr. King even talked about, the media's impact in giving visual presence to what was going on here in Montgomery caught the attention of people around the world during that bus boycott. And because certain journalists were writing the stories, and I remember a group of young people that came from Yale and Radcliffe, Harvard, to come start the Southern Courier newspaper. That's during the 1960s, but during the bus boycott, to go back there, it started a fire of advocacy and activism that people resonated with around the world that said, I don't have to put up with this. Mm-hmm. I don't have to accept the injustice and the humiliations of this segregated system, or this unjust system. And so people have taken We Shall Overcome, they march, they boycott, they've taken that method that Dr. King insisted on, a nonviolent movement. And it has just resonated around the world and continues to even now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
Because can I say this job, what it's doing, it is holding corporations accountable and many power. I'm going to put it this way. The powers that be. Mm-hmm. It's holding them accountable and it's putting them in a position where they have got to respond in a way that has to bring some type of I understand to the table of what is presented that's different. For instance, when Colin Kaepernick took the knee when the national anthem was played. So in the backwash of that, many of those companies in Atlanta, Delta, Coca-Cola, and there was one more who are, they make a lot of money in Atlanta as huge conglomerates, but they were forced, and I'm going to say encouraged, I'll use that as a better word. They were encouraged to take a vocal stand to say, I respect this young man's decision to have taken the knee, because it wasn't out of disrespect. It was just saying, we are tired of accepting the injustices, and this is the way in which I want to express my dissent of that.
Yeah.
And so many people, even as a result of that, the football coach of the commissioner came out and spoke out and took a position. Nick Saban here in Alabama, because he know he is working with all of these black top athletes. Yeah, he needed to take a stand and say, I understand.
Yeah.
And so I'm just saying all of this. This all came out of the Montgomery bus boycott to inspire us all that when we unite for a cause that is right, then it brings about change.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. It is so true. And I think what I appreciate is the way that you tell stories and it's so extraordinary. And I guess I'm just wondering, what impact do you think that has? Why do you find that telling stories is so effective?
You know, so I think storytelling is the gift of teacher is really what it is. And the gift of teacher is it's a spiritual gift that's given, you know. And so everybody has, I think, a measure in which it's creatively given to come through them in a certain way. Well, based on my curiosity as a kid, you know, growing up here in Montgomery, on the west side of Montgomery in the segregated town, and watching the people of my community, how we all engage, because your coach, your teacher, your preacher, the mechanic, everybody lived next door to each other.
Yeah.
So you get in trouble, You in for it. Everybody knows it. And at the time, you could be reprimanded by other people at that time or corrected. And they were doing that intentionally because we were a community that needed to train. They knew they needed to train us children because it was a part of our safety of just existing in this city.
Yeah.
So before you leave home, now this is how you do this. This is your deportment and demeanor while you're on your way to piano lessons.
Yeah.
Now, when you get on the bus, go do this. So we receive many instructions here. So I'm just saying that to say we are, I'm just grateful.
Yeah. Well, and I guess your personal story of growing up in Montgomery, your personal story of how you have evolved and learned to love yourself and struggles with suicidal ideation. And it's such a powerful story, and it's so inspiring to all of us. So I just want to thank you, Wanda, for your ministry, which is really what I think it is. It's a ministry to all of us who have the gift of getting to meet with you and talk with you and learn from you.
Thank you for that, Jeff. Jeff, can I say this too?
Yeah.
I want to say that I think, and this is what I want people to understand when I share my story, it's about allowing yourself the, I don't want to use the word privilege, but the honesty of just being who you are. Mm-hmm. And that whatever your journey is, it's what your journey has been. So many of us live with a mask because we don't really want to tell people who we really are. Mm-hmm. We don't really, many of us don't really accept for ourselves who we are. For me, for many years, that was a part of that suicidal tendency because I was afraid because I didn't love who I was. I didn't appreciate what I had. I didn't think I had anything to really bring to the table of humanity that anyone would want to hear me say. So I'd sit in the room with you and I'd be quiet because I didn't want you to think, you know, that, you know, I didn't have anything of substance or of importance to say. And I didn't want to present myself in that way, but it was all fear. Mm-hmm. And it was all because I was comparing myself to you. Mm-hmm. And I put you on some pedestal that you didn't even know you were on. Mm-hmm. And so I share my story because now I have come to a place where I'm okay with the diversity of who I am even.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, well, and I want to be honest and transparent.
Well, we are so grateful for you, Wanda, and for your ministry and gifts to the world. I can't thank you enough on behalf of our group and for others who have the pleasure of getting to meet you and be with you. Thank you for all that you're doing and for just this gift of who you are.
Thank you.
So, is there anything else that you would like to share with us, with the audience, before we sign off?
Jeff, I want to thank you for engaging and inviting me to come and have this time with you and your audience to just share this part of my life and who I am. And I'm very honored. And I want to say to everybody, you know, keep being love and being light because it's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And love yourself. Love the divine who created you. Love yourself and go out and cast the light on as many people as you can every day.
Yeah.
As Dr. King said, love and help somebody every day. That's it. Yeah. Love and help somebody every day.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Wanda. Love you and hope to meet again.
Thank you, my brother, my friend.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Benders of the Ark podcast, where we explore the stories of those who dare to do the hard work of social change and bending the arc of the Moore universe toward justice. Be sure to subscribe and check out more stories and interviews at bendersoftheark.com. Our music is a splendid creation of Joshua Campbell titled Sing Out, March On. So until next time, keep bending the arc of the Moore universe toward justice for creation and all of God's people.